The views and opinions of Muscle Minds is for entertainment and educational purposes only.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Better than he was before. Better, stronger, faster.
Welcome to Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson, Jordan Peters, and Scott McNally, part of the Advices Radio Network, a new voice in bodybuilding podcasting, presented by Nance Geese.
Welcome back to Muscle Minds. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, is Dr. Scott Stevenson and Jordan Peters. Guys, I hope that you had a great Easter. Jordan, I believe you were recently rolling around on the floor trying to get to the microphone after having trained some legs today.
Yeah, my body's taking a beating as well. I sound like a broken record every time. I'm like, yeah, my body's smashed. I had heavy deadlifts on Monday, and that was the hardest set of deadlifts I've ever done.
That was awesome.
Ever.
Mm-hmm. I said that. That's what I was about it. You can't go any harder than that.
Like, because I couldn't get my hips in on the third rep, but I refused to say that was a rep without fully getting my hips in. So it felt like it took me about 6 or 7 seconds. Maybe it wasn't as long as that, but to lock out the last rep was, it took everything. And that was on 335 kgs for 3 reps.
Jeez.
So that was my 3 rep PB. I don't know what that is in pounds. It's like 737?
Yeah, somewhere in there, it sounds like.
Times 2.2. Yeah, 737 for 3. Wow. So I was really happy with that. But then the knock-on from that was, then we made legs today. My whole body felt smashed. And then me and one of my good friends absolutely went at it today. And after that, feeling it. So it's been really hard to get all my food in this evening because my body just doesn't want to know. It doesn't want to eat. I can't get comfortable.
Yeah.
Just one of those days where, finishing this food is going to be hard. I'm on my second post-workout meal right now. And it's a chore.
So explain this to me. What you're telling me is this is your central nervous system is what we're talking about, right?
Yeah. I mean, the kind of training that I've been doing a lot recently is pretty destructive, really, from a neural perspective. It's not the best way, really, to build muscle when you're trashing your neural system that bad.
Yeah.
If you're constantly detracting from just muscular tension, and you're doing these kind of discontinuous reps in at percentages that are really high if you're one at max, it's really, really demanding neurologically to recover from. And it's not really an ideal strategy just to carry on doing this for a very long time, because usually the end result is either injury or your lifts regress or you just kind of struggle to recover as a whole. So I've probably got one more of these kind of lifts in me, because I think I can take 2.5 kilos more, like probably next week, I'll probably do it. And then I'll drop back down and do some like 8 to 10 rep work for a bit.
Okay.
Wow. Which should fly up. You know, once
it
you bring
certainly
it back,
should, yeah.
It's going to feel light as shit. You know,
it really should. And
yeah, then it'll be, 600 pounds, but it'll be a breeze.
And I'll work my way back up through the percentages again. And then that second time back up, I'll try to surpass where I ended on this one. Like, my goal for the year is to pull, I'd like to pull 800 pounds for a double.
Nice.
That's the goal, because that's what Ronnie did.
Yeah, exactly. Chasing the goat, baby.
Yeah. I'm pretty certain I'll do that this year if I carry on this path. So just gotta stay injury is the only thing that will stop me. So as long as I stay injury free, then it's on.
So how did Lake
show this year?
No show?
Yeah, legs was cool. It was just everything was tight and locked up, and didn't really want to know. So everything just felt a lot harder.
Yeah,
it was all good. I beat all my lifts once I got warm. I was fine, really.
I feel like this is a great example here, right? Too where I talk to a lot of newer guys that haven't trained for a long time. They don't want to take days off from the gym, and they think, well, I didn't train back, you know, now I'm training legs, so I'm fine. But I mean, when you take it to this level, this is a perfect example of like why you actually need rest.
For me at the moment, I always need a rest day either side of my back session.
Okay.
Because that is the session that destroys me the most, because I either do a rack pull, a deadlift variation, or a row. And even at the moment, because of the way I'm doing my barbell rows, they're like power rows. Mm. And they destroy me as well. So definitely always a rest either side of back for me for pull. There's no way I could do that session and the next day do anything effectively at all.
What do you mean by power rows?
It's hard to describe. There's just a little bit of momentum in the row. Mm. I don't think the form's sloppy in the sense that my lower back never breaks down. I have quite a strong lower back, so I never really break shape. But it kind of looks like I'm in the position in which I deadlift when I'm in the bottom of the row, and I just use a little bit of inertia to get the weight going, and then I just try to finish off the contraction.
Gotcha.
So I do that for like a heavy set of five, and I find that really, really is helpful for my deadlift. Because just staying in that fixed row position for those reps is a killer. You'll see a lot of good deadlifts is they do pause deadlifts where they'll pull the bar off the floor, they'll pause in that position, which is where I'm in the bottom of the row, and then they'll complete the deadlift.
Yeah.
I've never really gotten anything from that, but I get a lot from doing these kind of rows in this position. So this is a lot of my training as well. Obviously, the goal is max hypertrophy, but I've been obsessed with having a good deadlift for a while. And now I've got on this run, I'm really gearing my training towards that for a bit now, just because it's really fun.
Nice. So Scott, you were bringing up a point. That means no contest this year, then?
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm guessing that's sort of why I asked, is if Jordan's going to push between now April to 800, you know, is going to add 60 plus pounds to his deadlift.
Yeah.
For those reps, you know, with a contest break in there, it's going to be hard to make that kind of progress. So
we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do plan to compete.
Okay.
I just think that it's about 30 kilos for a double. I mean, it'll be probably 25 kilos because I think I've got a bit more in me for a treble. Yeah, it depends. It depends how hard as well I push with drugs. I think that kind of strength, you have to acknowledge that the drugs you use do play a bit of a role.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends how hard I push and how I feel. At the moment, I feel pretty good. But like I still haven't added in any orals. So I still have those up my sleeve. And if I chuck some Halo and some M-Tren on top of this,
oh God,
then it's fucking really on.
Yeah.
But I'm holding them back for now just because my appetite slides so fast on those. And then the neural stress becomes a whole new level again because you have this extra super physiological strength on top of what you already have.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to see what I can eke out a bit more. But I do still plan to compete. I'm going to compete at the end of the year. But I'm fairly confident I can get this deadlift because, interestingly, when I lose a little bit of weight from where I'm at now, I'm actually a more efficient deadlifter because I can get into a better setup. Right now, with my waist kind of where it is and like just carrying a bit more weight, I can't quite get into the position where I'm most powerful. I need to be about 10 to 12 pounds lighter, and I just have the extra mobility to get into a better setup, and I'm more powerful from that pulling position, without a doubt.
What are you weighing now?
273.
Okay.
I'm struggling to put on weight again. I've been sitting here for the last few weeks, It's a bit frustrating because my calories aren't crazy high. They're like 5,700, but and actually now for some reason at this point struggling to eat more. Usually this point would be a breeze for me, but I think it's probably just because of the training that I'm doing, to be honest. It's just I'm just finding it hard to eat. So I'll keep taking my calories up and I'll get it done. So
Jordan, do you think I got sort of two thoughts that, you know, it's always a balancing act. You know, if you train too hard, like you said, you know, then like right now you're like, how do I get this friggin' food down? If you don't eat the food, you don't make the gains. And then we talked before when you were over here, we were all at Columbus, about your legs, you know, had that injury that was kind of bugging you, but the way you deadlift, there's a lot of leg drive there. And it, like you said, it impacted your leg session to some degree. I mean, you got it done, you made progress, but you're still making, you know, inroads into your leg training with your back training.
How I fixed that over the last few weeks was just lowering my volume of my leg work.
Ah, there you go. I like that. That
completely went away. Because what I was doing was, I was essentially on back day, it was like hitting legs with just a low dose. So I was increasing the frequency of leg training on that over the week because of the back set, the back day. They get two sets of deadlifts, but really if you're training at that intensity, two sets is enough to elicit something going on. But the problem was is then that I was beating myself up too much in my main leg session, not really recovering from that. And as I was going back into the back session, I was just creating this vicious cycle of just under recovery. Lowering the volume of the leg session has fixed it all. Progress is flying again now.
Good.
In terms of my leg strength, like even though I was beat up today, my leg strength was absolutely fine. I was able to leg extend pretty heavy today, which I haven't been able to do in ages.
Oh, nice.
Which is cool. Yeah. So just that adjustment in volume has served me pretty well.
People don't usually, it's just the way our minds and our egos are driven. You know, if X amount of volume is not getting it done, you want to just
do more.
You just want to pound it. Fuck it. I'm going to do more and I will adapt, you know. But, you know, I command you to grow. That kind of shit.
That's the thing. I can feel that I'm always walking the line of overreaching. So the idea of adding more to me is just, it's not even an option.
Yeah.
It's just an impossibility. I can feel that. I can always feel that. Just because my general inflammation in my joints and my body's constantly telling me that more is it really isn't. Because the only way I would rather do more would just be fluffy shit. And that's bringing nothing to the table.
The guy I was just in the gym with helping out, he likes to do volume training. That's what he's done. But, you know, he's basically, you know, kind of stuck with that. We worked on a bunch of different things, and I was trying to let him keep what he likes to do, because he really enjoys that kind of training. It's part of what he loves about bodybuilding, but, you know, he'd never used a logbook before. And so we talked about ways he can incorporate some progressive overload into certain exercises and, you know, and sort of the mindset that's involved there. And at one point in our conversation, I said, imagine, you know, instead of the 20 sets you might do for thighs, if your entire family were suspended above an active volcano, and if you didn't get 20 reps with a given weight, they would be dropped into the molten lava. You'd do those 20 reps no matter what happened. You basically sacrifice yourself getting that weight. And then if you did 3 sets like that as opposed to 20, you think you could do 20 sets like that? No way. You know, and then when I kind of put it to him in that way, it's like, holy crap. And so that's the beauty of weight training is that, you know, it creates a stimulus that's so far and above what we're normally encountering in our day-to-day lives that, you know, you're basically forcing the muscle to grow, but you just can't overdo that. And the harder you train, the less you train. And big example here.
What's funny as well is that on my main leg day, I was doing 6 very, very, very hard sets. And that was, like I said, that was just, and who would think really that 6 would be too much? I could not, I know you would know, Scott, for sure.
Yeah.
You would know that 6 sets like that is
it's hard. Like, but I've cut back to 4 and I'm absolutely fine.
Right.
And that's all it took. But a lot of people would think, oh, if I'm doing 6, yeah, like you said, let's go to 10, let's go to 12.
And that's why, you know, you get 20,000 views on a set on a standing leg, a squat machine or something like that, because of how much you train, and people like that. It's extraordinary.
It really is.
You know?
For sure.
So, yeah, but, you know, not everyone can do that or will do that or wants to do that. So that's the distinguishing factor.
I've been quite lucky because at the moment, Corinne is obviously doing her own split. She's not training with me. But one of my good friends I've known for a really long time that used to live kind of down south near London where I was happens to have moved up here as well. So he's hopped in on some of these sessions with me, and he's just brilliant. He's crazy, and he can take it there on those sets too. It's like I needed a partner because I do need, like, just I feel better when I do train with someone at the moment. And someone hopping in that could just bring it straight away was really cool.
It's awesome.
I think since we last recorded, I trained with Nathan D'Asher as well.
Yeah, it's awesome. And clips from that.
Holy shit, that dude is a beast.
Yeah, how so?
Like, he is so fucking strong. Like, whoa, strong. I couldn't even believe it. Like, we were doing, like, medium rep work on some of the hammer strength loaded machines, but obviously the weight was fairly heavy, and I got like 13 reps on one of these sets on something that I know I'm strong at, and I've not seen someone load up like 5 plates onto the low row hammer strength machine, and he does 20 reps. And I was just like, what the fuck? And it's because he'd never trained in that low volume approach. He'd always done feeder sets. So before, he'd have done like 10 reps on one plate, 10 reps on 2 plates, 10 reps on 3 plates, but he would never have gone above 4 plates because he would have just been fatigued by them. But I was like, okay, let's try it this way. Let's just do like 5 reps on one plate, 4 reps on 2 plates, 3 reps on 3 plates, like 2 reps on 4 plates, like just all the way up, like just dropping the reps as we go. And he's like, yep. And I could see the way he moved 4 plates. So I was like, oh shit. And then, 5 plates. And I literally was like, I looked at the camera because we had a videographer there, and I was like, I have never, ever seen anyone do that, ever. And it just kind of blew my mind. I was like, whoa.
Wow.
And it's with some of these guys that obviously train really hard. Nathan trained like a machine. But they kind of, they're being held back by training with that feeder set mentality. And for that one session, we took the governors off him, and on everything we did in that gym, he said, I've never done that before. I've never done that before. I've never done that. He was handling weights he'd never, ever done in his life. And when you think, and for good reps as well, good, so there's good time under tension, good quality reps. And then you think to yourself, think of the adaptive response that you've just created from that.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. I said this to him. I was like, when you go back into QA, just for your very first exercise you do, let them let you do this. Because they don't let them do any stuff like that out there. It's all very short rest periods, feeder sets on everything, and they don't like them heavy loading in any way at all.
They worry about injuries?
Kind of, yes, but they're more focused on just maximizing blood flow and maximizing the pace of the session. And then obviously the fact that these guys are special, so they can push and get still some fairly decent loading done regardless.
Yeah.
But like, if you kind of just took that off them for just maybe one set, so they just got a bit of heavy work done on top of it, then I think that would, I would know what that would do. Like, that would 100% bring about even more muscle growth, without a doubt.
It just makes me think of, you know, Ronnie Coleman, who was, you know, he trained with high volume. I think people don't recognize about Ronnie is he trained everything twice a week, high volume. So he was, you know, just an alien. Obviously, you know, eventually things sort of broke down given his medical issues now. But
yeah,
Brian Dobson, you know, used to always say if Ronnie ever really, really wanted to just focus on powerlifting.
Oh, he'd have been unbelievable.
Yeah.
He'd have probably pulled 900 pounds.
Yeah.
Maybe even more. I mean,
I think probably even more. If he just if he just got as big and as bloated as he possibly could and just like, you know, just went after it and made himself like just a deadlift specialist. Or even, you know, just a big three. Who knows?
Yeah, he'd have been crazy strong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but yeah, I really enjoyed that session with Nathan, actually. He was really cool, and he told me a lot of stuff about like what they're doing out there, and was really open and honest with everything, really. It was a really, really, really cool chat. And after doing that session, I'm now even more of a fan of him, to be honest. I didn't realize he had the capability to train like that. Mm-hmm. It was so impressive. It was amazing.
That's awesome. How did you guys end up getting together? What brought that union about?
Because he was back in the UK from Q8 for a little bit, and his local gym's really close.
Mm.
So when he's at home, he's near. So like he said that when he's back in the UK, can he just be like my training partner from now on?
Oh, that's so cool.
I know. Oh, shit.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. So that's pretty cool.
You're going to get to guide him then, you know, you're going to, he's going to be doing this,
he's too good to phrase it in that manner. Let's be real.
Be an influence. Like, is kind of what I mean. You know, like
possibly
he's going to see if you guys get like a, you know, an eight or 10 week stint when he's back in the UK and you train like this, you know, and then he sees the results, that's going to have an influence.
Sure.
Yeah. It would be really, really cool.
Yeah.
But then that being said, he might not have access to what he maybe does out there. So
that's true.
They have an extra few little things that they have access to that, make things a bit more fun.
So there is some truth to that. Interesting.
A little bit. Yeah.
Those chickens.
Yeah, the chickens.
Well, because there's been speculation that there isn't. There's been speculation that it's just the consistency and that's what the main factor is.
I still believe that the main factor is the consistency. Like, they have pretty much access to what everyone else does. There's just a couple other little bits that would be pretty cool if you could get them.
Hmm.
But on the whole, it's the environment that they're in is so conducive still. That's without a doubt. So I don't want to take away from them in that way at all.
Sure.
Because I hate that when people would be like, well, it's all because of this or that.
Yeah.
Like, because that's just not fair when they're working as hard as that. But sure. I mean, everyone has access to, like this. I probably have access to things here in the UK that you guys don't have access to.
Hmm.
If you were to use these kind of things, which obviously you don't. Because where I am, getting things is really, like, I have access to, like I said, M-Tren and Real Halo and Real Primo and like Real Check Drops and these kind of things. They're quite rare. They're quite exotic. But, from what I've heard, that they're very hard come by in the States. So everyone's going to have access to different things depending on where they are, I suppose.
Yeah.
But the ultimate factor is just how consistent you are.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because we've seen and known this sort of phenomenon with what Eastern Bloc athletes did for decades, where you know their national pride is wrapped up in the performance of their athletes on an international scale, national stage. So those athletes, and you know, and this happens with the bodybuilders too in the Middle East, you know, obviously this is what they do. Like, they're governmentally funded. So they eat, train, sleep. And that's a heck of a lot different than trying to work a 9-to-5. You know, Brandon Curry was over there. And he did an interview on the size game. And, you know, he sort of went through, I listened to a lot of that, and he sort of went through his day, and he's just like, just gets up and, you know, does his cardio and eats and takes a nap. He goes and trains and poses and eats and then, you know, takes a nap, and they go all out to eat again, and then et cetera, repeat, you know, day in and day out.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I was in grad school training, this isn't quite the same thing, but, you know, of course, I was in grad school, like when I was doing my doctoral degree, and I was, you know, barely getting enough sleep to you know, to function and, you know, getting up at crazy hours and doing all, just constantly working every day, you know, day in and day out. And I would get a vacation every once in a while. And I'd have like a week, you know, for Christmas, something like that. And I would gain like 10 or 12 pounds just from like not doing anything, just because I'd get the rest. I'd go work out, I'd eat, you know, I'd fall asleep on the couch. I felt awesome. It was like, holy crap. So that same change, it's like I wasn't doing anything crazy. I just, you know, I was able to just, you know, live sort of the penultimate bodybuilder's lifestyle. So I think that makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Plus all the goodies, you know, it all synergizes.
Well, speaking of which, we haven't got to introduce you yet, Scott. And before the show, you like totally switching gears here. Speaking of goodies, you told me the you told me the sorbet is back.
The sorbet is back. Yes, I but I was not delusional in my concerns. I don't know if I mentioned that I ran into a guy. I may have told you guys in a message on Facebook, or maybe it was on the show. I ran into a guy after I first ran into this, and he was standing in front of the novelties section, freezer section, and he was equally dumbfounded. And I said, "Are you looking for sorbet?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "I know, it's a problem, isn't it?" He's like, "Yeah." He was actually from another country, so he kind of nodded, you know. It's like he just kept moving along, but he was lost. And then there was a guy that I met at the gym who actually listens to the show. He's got a show this weekend. His name's Connor. Connor, hopefully you kicked butt. And he had said hello to me in the gym, introduced himself, and his girlfriend came over, and we were all talking, and he had gotten hooked on sorbet, and he had the same issue. They went to Walmart, which I don't shop for food at Walmart. They were at Walmart, and there was no sorbet. So this was an issue, but I have at least been able to recover raspberry. And yeah, so there's raspberry and mango sorbet. So it's the supplies are slowly regenerating themselves. So I think the crisis has passed. And we can drop down from DEFCON 5 to like 2.
I think that the raspberry is my favorite. What's that brand? It's like, how do you pronounce it? It's like Talente?
I think it's Italian.
Yeah, that raspberry tastes legitimately like fresh raspberries.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but do you like the all those exotic flavors that you saw at that, that place that you mentioned last time on the show?
I didn't get them. I haven't bought those yet. I stick with the Talenti usually, and I get the raspberry and the mango. Those are my go-to.
Blood orange is still my favorite.
I got to try that.
That one's really good. And I love blood oranges too. Those are delicious.
Yeah, citrus in general is amazing.
Yeah, this like it's like a little bit more. It almost has a more of a berry like flavor. I mean, I think oranges technically are berries, but.
What's that? Hold on a sec. What's that? There's like a whole bunch of crunching sounds. Is that your mic, Jordan?
That's me unwrapping Rice Krispie Square Bars.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was like super. With your new mic, it's like super, super loud. I couldn't hear Scott.
Okay. Sorry.
No problem.
That's just a great flavor, man. That's just a real. That's the one that the exotic flavor I'll tend to find the most often. But I've seen some of those other flavors, but I don't even want to think about them because then it just makes me jones for them.
No,
but
man.
there's so many great flavors out there. But you know, the interesting thing, and I was talking about this actually with Connor, and I've been thinking about before then with the sorbet is like, it's an interesting sort of insight into how our minds work, because I just mentioned this, you know, we talked about the ices that I was eating before and then people like want to latch onto that as some sort of secret, you know? And the thing that's really interesting about food, and the data are out there. There's an interesting piece of research that came out in the last year where they were trying, they gave, oh God, they had like 800 subjects, and they gave them a standard number of test meals to consume while they measured blood glucose levels. And they tried to predict the blood glucose levels, and they were all over the place across individuals, meal by meal. And some of that was predicted anthropometrically, you know, a person's size or the body fat percentage, those sorts of things, waist-hip ratio, blah, blah. And as well as they did a genetic analysis. They did a genomic analysis of the microbiome. So they looked into their gut bacteria and were able to break down that. And that was a significant contributor to a regression equation that they're able to use to predict the glycemic index or the glycemic response to these different meals. So two things. One, the gut biome, we're starting to figure out all sorts of cool stuff because there's a lot more actual DNA in the gut biome than in our own cells. We're really in a complete symbiosis with those. And then also just the glycemic index is all over the place for different meals.
Sure.
And different carbohydrates. I mean, you give people white bread and glucose. There's a study I've talked about before, I think, and some people have a really high GI with white bread and not with maltodextrin or glucose. And then, you know, other people will be flip-flopped around. They'll have a higher GI with glucose versus the white bread. It's like, so what's going on here? And so that's why I think, for me, despite sorbet, you know, of course, there are different fruits it's made from, and fruit having different percentages of fructose, which you would expect to lower the GI. That's a part of what goes into this, but I think for me, the sorbet is just something that elicits probably a really high insulin release and accompanied with a high glucose response. And I have a glucose monitor. I need to test this and see how high it is compared to some other. I'll like try some bagels and some other carb sources.
That would be cool to see.
Yeah, I probably should do that because that's why I think that works so well for me. And anyone who's coached a lot of people or people who have done a lot of shows is, you know, people carb up really well on certain foods. They use the ones that they've used during their diet. That's a smart idea. But sometimes people will be like, you know, white rice just doesn't do it for me, but you know, bagels are great.
Yeah.
Or sweet potatoes, you know, they really work really well. I don't care what the GI is. Those just do it for me. So we have, you know, different responses based on a whole host of factors. And I think that's why the sorbet works so well for me. But the other part of that is it's just interesting that people want to make it simple, you know, and say, well, sorbet is the secret and everyone's eating sorbet. And of course it tastes great.
Right.
And that's part of it too. But I wonder, you know, how much variability there's going to be as the actual effect of sorbet on, you know, loading glycogen and filling someone out, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
So those are my deep sorbet thoughts.
No, I think it makes sense. I think that, I mean, there are some reasons why it could be beneficial, say, over certain other foods. Like, I can tell you that for myself, if my goal was to load carbs, I could load a lot more carbs with sorbet than I could, say, with bagels, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it's nice. I like it when I'm trying to carb up, fill back out if I'm not taking in a bunch of water pre-contest. It's the thing I'll do. I'll arrive someplace and, you know, hopefully I have a freezer and I'll go and buy sorbet.
Really?
I've been doing that for years. I'll, you know, the first thing I do when I land, if I haven't, you know, sometimes I take an RV to a show, but I'll get sorbet because it has very little water relative to the carb. Actually, the carbohydrate to water ratio in sorbet is about 1 to 3, which is somewhere roughly where what happens with glycogen storage. There's, you know, it's actually somewhat variable in terms of how much water goes along with each gram of glycogen that gets stored.
Okay.
People want to cite it like 2.7, which is a number from a rat study.
I didn't know that there was variability.
Oh yeah. A huge amount of variability. Guy, what's his name from, he did Ohio State. Did this study, and yeah, they tried to calculate this because it was a follow-up to the rodent study, where that 2.7 number comes from, and yeah, it's all over the place.
Interesting.
And yeah, so some people fill out better than others, and of course it's going to depend on, to a certain degree, how much glycogen you had to start with, and of course the food that you eat, and the recency of exercise will determine your insulin sensitivity and how much carb he's been eating before that, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, but it does vary.
Hey, I saw a couple of videos that you've posted. Well, I think one of them you just shared with Jordan and I, And the next one, you had posted two different Widowmaker sets on leg day with squats. Your legs are looking crazy. I mean, what's going on right now? Because you look to me like kind of contest ready.
I don't, you know, my dysmorphia kicks in when I consider that, you know, but I want to get, you know, just like mind-bogglingly shredded, like, oh, Jesus.
Okay. Like,
what the hell's, you know, there's no skin on this dude, shredded. So I sort of have a, like a different bar I've set for myself, but I'm getting close.
Right on.
Yeah.
What's the, do you have a show picked out? I don't think we've talked about that on the show here.
I don't know. I'm going to do the Team Universe again.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I did last year. I did that. I had to do a qualifying show. I might do a qualifier if there's something like really close. I haven't even bothered to look, to be honest. It would just be for shits and grins.
Isn't that usually around 4th of July?
It is exactly 4th of July weekend.
Okay. It's
like, you know, a couple of days before that. So yeah.
What are we talking now, weeks wise?
It's like 8 or 9 weeks.
Oh, it's coming up quick, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know, I'll be good to go. I'm probably ready in like 5 or 6 weeks. So,
well, based off those legs alone, you look to be kind of ready sooner. I mean, I obviously can't see everything else, man, but you were looking pretty crazy.
Well, some of it's skin, you know. I got to get my skin to tighten up, so I'd like to be ready a little bit earlier. Low back skin. But you know, I'm getting lines across my glutes now. When I contract them, and
nice.
My low back is, you know, I'm getting the when I see like the bottom of my lats become visible, like the nice sort of triangle at the bottom of my lats, and that's good stuff. So I'll probably show, and then maybe if I do well. Last year I did decently well in the Team Universe, so I felt obligated to do the Masters Nationals.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't pan out well. So I might do the same this year, but I'll think twice about it because my placing at Masters National sucked. It was my worst ever.
Where'd you end up there?
I was tied for 16th. I was in last place.
And where had you been at Team Universe?
I was one place away from a pro card.
Damn.
I got second at Team U. It's like, oh, well, shit. I guess I should try Masters Nationals. it was pretty funny. I won't tell all the details, you know, just, I guess, for political reasons or what have you. But, yeah, I figured, well, shit, it's like 2.5 weeks. And I looked better. David Coleman, shout out to David if you listen to this. We've done 4 Masters Nationals together, and he was at the Team U and the Masters National, and he thought I looked better. He's, like, been a top 10 national competitor for at least a decade now.
Okay.
So I looked better at the Masters. But judges were different, so that part of it.
Sure.
And I was thinking it would be the same judges. I was, you know, was sort of like, okay, well, they've seen me once, so they'll be looking for me. Right. And, you know, that's to your advantage. It just gives them some familiarity. But it didn't happen. I wasn't too familiar to the second set of judges. And I was in the last. The thing that that this particular head judge does at the and people know this, she was doing this at Masters Nationals, is she would do, and I've never seen this before, like really ever. It's kind of bizarre, is she would do the first call out, you know, 5 or 6 people, what have you, and then after that call out was done, those people would be ushered off stage. And then the next call out, and then they would be ushered off stage. So if you happen to have someone who's just as outstanding in the second call out, and they really deserve to be compared with someone from the first call out, that's basically impossible.
Right. Yeah. Because
those people, you know, they've left the area. So from what I kind of gathered, given what I heard, that, you know, the appearance of like, oh shit, I dropped the ball, is that when they got down to the last call out, and it was me and a few other people, it's like the judge looked up and said, "Uh-oh, I think I should have called these guys out earlier."
Oh, damn!
But there's no way to do it.
Yeah.
So it's just how it is, you know. That's, I'm not in it to, like, you know, to please judges or what have you. I just like to learn and improve. So, but it'd be cool, you know, to get another good placing.
Hell yeah!
So I'll just do the Team U, and then, you know, who knows?
So you know, we've talked before about the difference between suffering and discomfort. I'm not going to ask you if you're suffering now, But how uncomfortable are you at this stage?
Not at all, really.
Yeah?
No, not really one bit.
You don't sound uncomfortable.
No, I'm not. I mean, I haven't really, you know, with, like we did talk about, I got, you know, I was making some gains and growing the way I wanted to, and I got sick, yeah, you know, and lost a bunch of weight, and it took about 3 weeks to get that back. And that happened, I think, kind of through three cycles.
Okay.
I got, like, I think at least twice I got sick. My heart, I mean, I don't even focus on it now, but I, so basically my about 3 or 4 months were kind of lost. So that basically meant that just kept me lean, decently lean.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had a good starting point, and I liked it. I like dieting, you know, I prefer it over trying to, force feed.
Sure.
Me too. Off season.
I'm better at it too. That's where I feel like I excel. And I feel like because of that, that's probably the reason that I like it better.
Mm, yeah. Like, you like getting absolutely shredded.
Yeah, I'm better at getting lean than I am at getting big. So I think that's part of it. Kind of like, you know, if we like training a particular body part, it's usually because we're good at it, you know?
Right, right. It looks awesome in the mirror, and or you're really strong, or both. Yeah, so yeah, we do. We favor, you know, what we're good at. It's we're creatures of immediate gratification.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're kind of driven by that. It's... this guy by the name of Sam Harris has a interesting, it's about like a 20 or 30 minute monologue that's actually on the Tim Ferriss podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
And the whole monologue basically goes through, it's really quite interesting. It won't take much time to listen to if someone wants to find it. And I can't remember what its title. I can look on my phone here, but it's basically, you know, that in a certain sense, all we're, for the most part, what we do, what we live our lives doing is repeatedly seeking out pleasurable experiences and oftentimes avoiding those things that are painful.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we just kind of move from one thing. If you pay attention, you're sort of mindful of yourself. You say, well, you know, now I'm hungry. I want to figure out a way to avoid feeling hungry. Hold on just a second. Hey, come here. I know that guy looks like he's a huge threat. Let's see. Hey. So, yeah, anyway, so it is interesting. You know, we seek out the things we like, so it makes total sense.
Yeah.
It's very positive feedback to see yourself getting leaner. It's fun. Like, that's reaping the rewards of the off-season labors.
Muscle Minds is made possible in part by Jordan Peters. If you've enjoyed listening to Jordan today, check out his website, trainedbyjp.com. The site offers over 50 hours of video content covering everything, from the most basic approach to training and nutrition for beginners, all the way through advanced anabolic and insulin strategies for seasoned competitors. You can follow Jordan and Corin's blog as they prep for their next shows and have questions answered daily on their forum section. So check out trainedbyjp.com. If you've enjoyed Scott Stevenson's contribution to Muscle Minds, you can learn more about him, his products, and his services at his website, fortitudetraining.net. Those who purchase Scott's book or any of his coaching products receive a free subscription to his message board where he answers questions daily. So check out fortitudetraining.net. Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
Well, hey, sure. What do you guys say we dive into some questions? We've got a whole bunch of them lined up here. I'm sure we could probably knock through a good handful today.
Let's do it.
All right. For starters, this is from Dark Side Bodybuilding. He says, there's an old Dan Duchesne article where he talks about using captopril, it's an ACE inhibitor, to reduce the number of alpha-2 receptors. His theory was that ACE is involved in the generation of new A2 receptors. So by inhibiting it over time, with the turnover of old A2 receptors, you eventually have less because no new ones can be generated. Seems to make sense, but Dave Palumbo has said in his Q&A that he doesn't think ACE inhibitors impact A2 receptors. Dan also gave some anecdotal evidence of competitors that used his protocol and lost stubborn fat better than before. What do you guys think? He adds, even regardless of potential A2 reduction, wouldn't the lowering of aldosterone that also comes along with using ACE inhibitors be beneficial? I have to imagine that it would lower sub-Q water retention to some degree.
So do you want me to go on this one?
Yeah, feel free, Scott. What do you think?
Okay, so yeah, we the thing he mentioned here, that I think you may have you sort of gave him the benefit with the abbreviation of A2, but he actually was asking about alpha-2 receptors, the alpha-2 adrenoreceptors.
Okay.
You know, which are basically, you know, we break down the adrenoreceptors that epinephrine and norepinephrine bind to, the alpha and beta subtypes. And I think, I'm guessing whatever he read, because I'm not really familiar with this Duchenne article, is that he took A2 and turned it into alpha-2 when he might have meant angiotensin receptors.
Okay.
But I don't know. I looked into this one, and I don't know about anything. I couldn't find much about captopril or an ACE inhibitor changing or reducing the level of alpha-2s, but I did find a study where it increased alpha-2 levels on platelets. But those obviously are not adipocytes. So I don't know. I can kind of go into we had talked about when we had the podcast on the other site about ACE inhibitors previously, and there's some interesting data on this. Actually, ACE inhibitors and which would lower the activity. Thank you, Blitzy. You're awesome.
Blitzy. So that's ACE a great inhibitors. Name.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's a story behind the name. Or angiotensin II receptor blockers. So things that limit the activity of ACE have been prohibited by WADA because they have some ergogenic effects in some of the studies that have been done. They've been demonstrated to prevent like things like left ventricular hypertrophy in hypertensive patients. They have some impacts on capillarization. They improve glucose tolerance. They got some health benefits for people with congestive heart failure and those sorts of things who have fluid issues. But mainly the data that I've looked into, it has to do with endurance exercise and VO2 max. So it's kind of an interesting area because people sort of stumbled upon this and sort of tested it in endurance athletes, and there seems to be an ergogenic effect there. Someone asked me about this just like two or three days ago, or maybe about a week ago, but the thread has been going on my discussion board about this idea. And the thing that I noted for him is that lactotripeptides, so milk protein-derived tripeptides, VPP, which is valine, proline, proline, and isoleucine, proline, proline. So VPP and IPP are the two that seem to have the strongest ACE inhibitory activity. So there are actually studies, there's a number of studies been done with this where they used a milk protein hydroxylate and fed these to individuals with hypertension, and it reliably reduces their blood pressure in hypertensive patients. So those can be given as well. Now, as to whether those things would have an ergogenic effect, I haven't seen that yet, but it doesn't take, it's literally a milligram level dosage of these things. So you can get enough from a milk protein to reduce, to have an effect on angiotensin converting enzyme and on your blood pressure. Angiotensin II increases blood pressure. It basically increases the tension in the blood vessels, angio referring to the blood vessels. So it has a vasoconstrictive action. So anyway, I don't. As far as the original question with alpha 2 receptors, adrenal receptors on fat cells, and ACE inhibition, I don't know. But ACE inhibition in of itself, or blocking the binding of angiotensin 2 to the receptors, is something that does have some promise. And the lactotripeptides, those two in particular, they've investigated a whole, basically all the combinations you could come up with. But those are the two that stand out. You can buy that as a separate product. It's actually one of the components of supplements ARC Reactor and Recovery Factor X. There's a proprietary product in there that contains those two lactotripeptides to help with vasodilation and help getting a pump. Yeah. So it's more than he bargained for answer-wise, but it's the best I got.
Hey, speaking of the products at Granite, I've been using ARC Reactor as one of my pre-workouts. I worked it into the mix, man. It's very good. I like it.
Yeah?
It doesn't keep me up. It doesn't tweak me out too much. I'm able to get a good workout. I stay super focused, and I'm going to guess the teacrine is part of it. I've used that on its own now too. Yeah. I wanted to see what it was like just isolated. And I really like teacrine a lot. In the combination of the product, like I said, I get a really good workout. I get super focused, but at the same time, I don't feel like wound up afterward. I'm not unable to eat my food and stuff. It doesn't keep me up at night.
Yeah, it's really, it improves mood from the the research they've done. It actually improves libido too.
Really?
Yeah, I noticed that the first time I tried it.
Well, I'll have to report back.
I'm like, damn, here I sit alone. What am I going to do here? But yeah, I think I mentioned, the first time I took it, I have to take it early in the day or I can't get to sleep.
Okay.
And the first time I took it, I tried to take it in the afternoon. And this is just me, I think, because this is not everybody. This is the minority. But I just took like a regular, scoop at like 1 o'clock or something like that. And I was up till like the wee hours of the morning, just kind of sitting there thinking, okay, I can't sleep. I feel awesome. I don't mind it, but I'm going to mind it tomorrow because I'm going to be really tired with no sleep. But so it's definitely cool. It's a cool ingredient. I have a blog on theacrine.
Oh yeah.
On the granitesupplements.com site.
I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah. So people can find that at the blog, go to granitesupplements.com and this quick blog, you'll see my entry there.
And shameless plug for you, use the code SStevenson10 if anybody wants to check any of that stuff out.
There you go. Boom.
Jordan, what do you think about pre-workouts? Where do you stand on that? I don't think we've ever really talked in depth about that before.
I use them only really when I need them.
Okay.
I try to steer clear as much as possible, to be honest.
Except check drops in Halo.
for the final part of the prep, I'll use more caffeine, or maybe some ephedrine. But on the whole, I don't really use a pre-workout per se, because in my intra-workout shake, I put the supplements that have some fairly solid research behind them into my shake. So I'll be having creatine, beta-alanine, and citrulline across my workout anyway. But I'm not so sure that any of those have an immediate ergogenic effect. There's certainly nothing that I have felt from them in terms of an immediate effect. So I'm not sure it's totally necessary to use those as a pre-workout. There is good literature to suggest that they are beneficial additions. And then the only thing, like I said, that I'll utilize on top of that is caffeine or some of the slightly stronger, what are essential variations of caffeine. Like, I haven't had a good lineup with theacrine, which I would like to. That sounds really interesting. That's definitely something that I will try in closest to comp prep. And the other one that I like the look and the sound of is amino isoheptane, which is very similar to the ingredient that was in kind of Jap 3D that was banned.
What's the name of this?
It has two names. Geranium is one of them.
Oh.
And the chemical name or the other name, Scott will know.
No, I'm blanking. Yeah, because that's been banned here for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not. Geranium it's has not. Another name. Is it not DMAE? That's something else. Dimethylamylamine.
I'm not sure.
Oh, I meant the amino acid you're talking about. That you just mentioned.
Amino isoheptane.
Heptane. Okay, I couldn't quite hear you. You're a little bit quiet again right now.
Amino isoheptane. I'm not even sure that's an amino acid, to be honest. God, I'll be totally honest. I haven't researched these things enough. I've used them a couple of times, and I know that that is a strong stimulant. Beyond that, I don't know amounts about it, to be honest. I'm not a supplement guru at all, because I just don't really use that many in that sense. I don't buy into the marketing anymore.
Yeah.
Like I spend all of my supplement allowance, so to speak, on health supplement. my health supplement list is endless.
Yeah.
Whereas most people's kind of pre-workout cupboard is full. Mine is empty. Things that are trying to stop me dying at 50.
Yeah. All right. I wanted to ask because I wasn't sure where you stood on that. And, you know, I could say basically everybody I know, you are the strongest. You're doing some of the most intense stuff, probably. And I don't just mean this just to blow smoke, but you're probably doing some of the most intense stuff happening in the world right now. And I'm making that statement. Jordan's not making that statement, guys. I'm making that statement, and I stand behind it. I mean, I just came home from the gym. I'm going to tell you guys right now. I drove home from the gym in the rain. I was eating my food and kind of in a whirlwind, sat down. We plugged in. We got connected here. I'm listening to you talk about these lifts you have just done. And like my head is spinning over here and I'm thinking to myself, and the guys, once again, this is my opinion. I'm thinking to myself, like, I am listening to somebody who is one of the strongest human beings in our sport right now. That's my opinion. Blows my freaking mind. And this is somebody who's not using a ton of different pre-workouts. So I was just curious.
Yeah, but I'm using a fair amount of MPP, which is
right. I looked up this 2-amino isoheptane.
Yeah.
And it is like DMAA, dimethylamylamine, which is the extract from geranium. I kind of guessed at. Because I'm not big on pre-workouts either, to be honest, because they just crack you out and they wind you down and they have addictive properties to a certain degree and you feel like crap trying to get off of them. But this one, it's rather new. It's actually a combination of two different compounds, or there's two versions of it. Excuse me. So I'm looking at Price Plow. They do a nice job reviewing things. But so anyway, yeah, it's out there.
Well, I'm interested for now. I'm looking
certain
at
period
it
of time. Who knows though? Yeah,
I've seen the DMHA. Have you guys seen that?
That's what this is.
That's what I was wondering. Okay. That's what I was wondering. It does have a similar effect. I don't think it's as strong as DMA was, but definitely, you know, over at Bodybuilding Nerds, we're sponsored by Azoth. They're a nootropic product. And instead of adding caffeine, he added the DMHA to the product as like a mild little stimulant just to kind of give you a little bit of a push, you know. He calls it on the label here, it's 100 milligrams, because I honestly keep this stuff right by the desk and I take a couple of them with me when I'm about to do an interview. Octadrin.
Yeah, that's right.
So I guess it's also known as that.
The best one that I've used or trialed is actually again one of Joe Binley's products with AD. And it's the new Shreddable. You guys in the States have got a slightly better version of it. Has Alpha Jochenbein.
Oh, nice.
Oh, Rawolskin. Nice.
Really cool addition. We can't have that in the UK because it's banned.
Really?
But that his one has two of my amino isoheptane in. And just in the last couple of weeks of my mini diet, before I came out to Ohio, I was using that before some of my sessions. And that's what I will use again when I diet again. Because that was a really, really good product. I can't remember off the top of my head what's in it, the rest of the ingredient. I know obviously it has caffeine in. Actually, I've got a cup here.
I found it too. It's got 2-aminoheptane and N-acetyltyrosine.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then
generate thermocomplex, higonamine, kaon. This was the ingredient that I wasn't sure. These ones, they make you sweat a lot. And Joe said it was that ingredient, gamma butyrobetaine ethylester hydrochloride. And obviously, I've never heard of that. I like to sweat when I train. And these things, they make you sweat like crazy. So these are definitely something that I'll put back in towards the end of the prep, because that's been a pretty strong kick to them.
Sounds interesting. I would like to try something like that. I stopped using anything that has regular Jochenbein in it. I discovered I just don't metabolize it well anymore, but I've heard of people saying that they do very well with alpha Jochenbein.
Yeah, Rawolskin, it has a little bit higher binding affinity for the alpha 2 receptor. Speaking of, back to the alpha 2 receptors. But yeah, I've mentioned a couple times, different contexts, that there are people who, I think it's like 11 alpha hydrolase or something like that is the enzyme that's the key one in metabolizing Jochenbein. And there are people that are lacking in that. So their blood Jochenbein levels stay elevated for hours, like, you know, 8-10 hours, when someone else would have, you know, a much shorter half-life.
Yeah, and it's terrible.
And the so you're probably one of those people.
Yeah. My doctor wants me to get tested, actually, she wants to look at the, it's called the P450 pathway. Are you familiar with this, Scott? Yeah. And that helps you to understand whether, you know, you're an excessive metabolizer or a poor or intermediate metabolizer of, you know, various drugs and whatnot.
Yeah, that would be, so just do a get a genetic analysis of just your P450 ISA enzyme profile in terms of what genotype you have.
I guess she had kind of written it out for me to show me what she wants to do, but it's not going to be cheap, and it's not something that insurance is going to do very well with.
So that's the thing there. From what I understand, there are actually two enzymes that are involved with theacrine metabolism. And I think I do fine with caffeine. I do okay with Jochenbein. You know, I would get the sweats when I started up, you know, and kind of the, you know, sweat, cold, back and forth thing a lot of people do, but I do okay otherwise. But the theacrine, I'm just a slow metabolizer of, and that's probably, you know, my P450 enzyme that's in whichever isozyme that's involved with that particular substance. So it's good to know. I mean, just in case you're like on, you know, taking a lot of drugs, if you've been prescribed a lot of drugs, you know, you adjust your dosage, you have to be careful. And like stuff like grapefruit and orangin and hesperidin, which are found orangin's found in grapefruit juice, for instance, those can inhibit P450 enzymes and increase the half-life of certain things. Like there's actually a study where I believe they used asparagine and orangin along with synephrine.
Okay.
And in doing so, and I can't remember the doses, I have to go look at the study again, but, you know, you get a slight, synephrine binds to the beta-3 adrenal receptors. So those are the ones that increased uncoupling protein and are really really pretty pretty thermogenic in nature when they're activated, and they're able to get like, oh god, it was like over 100 calories of excess caloric expenditure, like 150 if they gave a standardized dose of Synephrine, which normally caused, you know, very little, like 30 or 40 extra calories to be burned.
Okay.
They could like quadruple the caloric expenditure from the Synephrine. Yeah, by adding that in there. Because, you know, you weren't able to clear away the Synephrine with once you blocked the P450 enzymes.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so people got to watch out. Grapefruit juice can be an issue for a whole bunch of drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, anyone who's a pharmacist out there knows, you know, you have to, it's one of the, or it's taking a lot of drugs. That's like the big, a big problem. I've looked, you know, I've looked into this just because it's a question that I've been asked before about, you know, the P450 enzymes and orals.
Yeah.
Anabolic steroids, oral anabolic steroids. And I haven't been able to find any information on which isoforms are particularly involved. I think I found a little bit, but nothing to give me a real idea, because you know, I have heard of people being told to eat grapefruit when with they take D-ball, their orals.
Right? Yeah,
with the D-ball, exactly. And that's the reason for doing that.
Yeah.
But I've never seen any, you know, it makes sense theoretically, as long as you're inhibiting the right enzyme of detoxification. But I've never seen any data, and you know, whether someone could, you know, get away with lower doses of those sorts of things. You know, by using hesperidin or Ingen, or, you know, just grapefruit juice or what have you, is a question I've been searching for an answer for a while.
You know, before we had done this show, I had heard someone else referencing you talking about this very topic. It's something I had wanted to bring up to you for a while. So if we can figure something out in the future, I feel like this is something that would be really fun to dive into a little bit further.
Okay. Yeah, I can refresh my memory and see if I can dig up any new stuff. But yeah, it's a cool topic. You know, the thing is, you wonder, I mean, the idea, main interest would be, you know, health benefits for people.
Sure.
You know, if some guy wants to take 50 milligrams, maybe you can just take 10 and get the same effects, you know, prolong the half-life of those orals, you know, but does that actually limit the side effects?
That's too? What I wonder, because I wonder if now you're just doubling the amount of D-ball in your system, or, you know, whatever.
Right. Right. You know, but the side effects, the hepatic side effects are coming about because you end up with free radical production in the course of detoxification.
Hmm.
And I'd have to go refresh my memory on, you know, the different steps that goes on, especially, you know, those specific to steroid detoxification. But that's why you like look at the herbs in Live 52, or when people take alpha lipoic acid or acetyl L-cysteine, or other antioxidants. And those herbs in Live 52 are herbs that have antioxidant activity in many cases by upregulating the body's own, the cell's own antioxidant defense systems.
Hmm.
So that's the issue. Is so if you block the detoxification, are you also maybe you're lowering that free radical production? You're lowering the toxicity, because the toxicity comes about through the process of removal. It's like you got a trade-off. It's like, okay, we can get rid of this foreign substance.
I see.
You know, this xenobiotic substance. But the trade-off is that you have some toxicity that comes along with it. So this is the way the body is sort of like, oh, okay, we got to do this.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. You know, if you dig and dig and dig, you can usually find answers to this stuff in the scientific literature, even if it wasn't what someone was specifically trying to study.
Yeah.
But it's a cool question. You know, anything to try to, you know, help keep bodybuilders healthy is of interest to me.
All right. I've got one here for Jordan. It says, keep in mind too, you know, we have gotten behind on the questions. So this one was back from February 6th. It's been a little while. He says, you've been posting some amazing, amazing client transformations, gaining massive amounts of size, in what I consider to be a pretty short period of time, and that clients are staying pretty lean. Recently, he saw somebody who went from 215 to 260 in 17 weeks and still had abs showing. He says, I understand that you don't want to give away all your secrets. What are the factors and concepts that you focus on to put on this much muscle so quickly? He said he's had trouble gaining size without putting on fat, you know, at the same time. I'm going to partially answer this question, and I'm going to say the first step is go to trainedbyjp.com, and for only $10, you can $10 US, you can sign up and start learning today. Well, take it from there, Jordan.
Thank you. Firstly, there's no real big secret, in honesty. If you think that there's a secret, that says to me something about where you're at in your kind of journey and development with this. Because as you become a little bit more advanced, you really learn that there are no secrets. And the guys, I have a handful of them that I picked up post-show. So that's one thing to note, that these guys are really, really, really primed to grow from this position. They've been in a caloric deficit for maybe 16 weeks. They maybe haven't been training as optimally as I would like them to. And they're in the position then where you, if you change the training focus to one that allows them to progress the most on their lifts and you keep them healthy, so obviously we're monitoring their blood work post-show, cruising at appropriate times and then pushing at appropriate times as well, you can put on a hell of a lot of muscle before you get fat if you're kind of patient with it. It just comes back down to the same things that we've talked about for a few times when it comes to the post-show rebound. And one thing that I despise is people putting on weight too quickly. And I'm really, really, really strict with my guys and my girls post-show. I explain to them that if you screw this up in the first 3 weeks, that's it. You fucked it. And I will be as blunt as that. And I've actually had a client that was like, oh, I really, really won't. I really won't. 2 weeks post-show, he'd gained over 40 pounds. And that was it. I literally, it frustrated me so much that I dropped him as a client. Because I explained so well that if you want to succeed in this phase, the 40 pounds of weight you're going to put on is not going to be until 20 weeks time that we get up to that. And the guy did it in 2 weeks. And I said, if you do that, I don't want to know. It's kind of harsh, but I don't care, because I've told you what's coming. I told you that you're going to want to eat, but if you want to succeed, you have to control your weight and you have to be patient. And the guys that have put on shitloads of muscle are the ones that have completely taken that on board and just ran with it perfectly. And they've executed this rebound to a T. To be honest, it's the exact same rebound that Scott did with me in 2012. That's it. He showed me how to do it that well. And he took me from 210 to 286 pounds in 6 months.
God damn.
And I'm just replicating that. That's it. And that was all we did. It was patient and just got really, really, really fucking strong. All the guys All the guys that have put on that muscle at the end of these like 20 weeks, 24 weeks, they are all now the strongest they have ever been. They're doing things that they've never ever even got close to. And that's it. There's no secret there. So if you're one of these people that screw up your post show, please change that. Be a lot more patient and then just obsess over getting really strong. And the muscle will come. It has no choice. And if, sadly, if someone's trying to sell you secrets or that there's an idea of a secret, like I despise that in the fitness industry. I fucking hate it so much. Because I see it a lot. Like, I'm going to tell you the secret. I'm going to tell you what the pros don't tell you.
Sorbet.
If you hear someone... Yeah. If someone ever says that to you, just tell them to fuck off.
So. I'll tell him Jordan told me that I should tell you to fuck off.
Yeah, fucking do it. They can message me, I don't care. Because I'm so bored of it. Like, I'm not having a dig at this guy for thinking there's a secret. Because sure. I can totally see why people yeah. will think that.
Listen, and there was probably sure a point.
At one point, yeah.
There was probably a point you did too, right? Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. And then the longer you do this, the longer you realize, no, you're either genetically blessed and you're just a freak and it's just going to happen anyway, or you're someone that's just really consistent, ticks all the boxes and just works really, really hard. And that's it. That's the only way to get from A to B.
You know, there is kind of a secret in a way. Everyone's like, you know, turning up their volume now. It's metering your desire with patience.
Yeah.
You want it so bad, you're hungry and crazy after a show, so you just go bomb sometimes. But you want it so bad, you go, and you have to meter that desire by being patient and meticulous. That's kind of willpower right there. Like if you're talking about it's what you will come to manifest in your body. That is where it comes. That's where the rubber meets the road.
Like I have a good friend who is a good bodybuilder. He's been a client off and on of mine for years, but I would call him a friend and not a client now. And he's a great bodybuilder, has loads of potential, and he's on track next weekend, I think, to do some serious damage in a show. He looks absolutely amazing, but for the past 2 to 3 years, he's always cropped up his post show. He puts on a hell of a lot of weight really, really quickly. And we've kind of joked over these last couple of weeks because he made the same remarks about how I have like these handful of guys that have put on what seems to be a lot of muscle from their post-show rebounds. And I said to him last week that I'm going to lock him under the cupboard in my under the stairs. And I'm going to lock him in the cupboard and feed him through a hatch because there's no way that I'm going to let him gain that weight one more time like he has. If he does, I'm going to disown him as a friend.
You're not going to listen to him when he complains about it. You're just going to laugh at him.
I think this time he's learned. I'm hopeful that he'll be able to do it. He has a real weakness for Burger King, so he hits the Burger Kings hard. But yeah, it's just that patience is important.
All right. That's great stuff there. I got a question here, and this is something I think we could kind of break things down overall because it's a question about what his test levels should be given the amount of gear he's using. And Scott, I feel like you might kind of have a better understanding of this formula. So the question itself is, he says, he recently had called out a source after doing blood work and coming up short. He posted his labs and the dosages being used, tested about 6 to 7 weeks into the cycle. So he was using 400 milligrams of test sip every other day and 200 milligrams of MPP and 200 milligrams of MPP Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Scored a total of 3,700 nanograms per deciliter. Guys on the same lab doing bloods 200 milligrams a week and show bloods to be over 1500 or under 1500. He says
he mixed up the greater than less than sign there. I think
so. I was doing a little bit of interpretation here, I think. He says, the thing is, I have blood tests of myself showing my test higher on less gear. So to start here, Scott, what's the basic amount that somebody would expect? And I understand this, you know, the range is going to be different. Everybody, you know, we talked about metabolization. Everybody's going to metabolize gear differently. But, you know, let's say somebody's taking hormone replacement therapy, we'll say 200 milligrams a week. What is there an average that somebody should be looking for on their lab work of that?
I mean, yeah, that people 100 milligrams, the testes produce 7 to 10 you know, milligrams a day, but that's just testosterone, not esterified testosterone. Yeah. So 100 milligrams of a test ester is what, you know, your sort of standard TRT would be, but some people use 200 because of the ways in which they metabolize this. There's like a particular phosphodiesterase enzyme in the liver that your isoform can substantially determine how much testosterone is elevated with a given injection. So, you know, what did he say? He had, you know, 600 Watson farm test milligrams put a bit 4,500 nanograms per deciliter. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's where you might, that's, you know, that's if 1,000 is, he's four times above, basically, that's reasonable. Okay. Someone on 200 milligrams might get 1,000, you know, 400 milligrams might, they might get 1,500 to 2,000, something like that. You know, 600, once you go above that, you know, a lot of people don't test, they don't get their blood tested, so you know exactly how high it is, but at 200 milligrams should put you at the top of the normal range.
Okay. Okay. So if he was taking 400 milligrams of SIP every other day, or I'm sorry, yeah, every other day plus MPP Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 200, his score would probably come out higher than 3,700. It sounds like he needs new gear.
Yeah, I mean, because he was doing 600 and he got higher than that. So he's doubled the dose and he came back lower value. You know, there's some variability, assuming he got a test at the same place. So timing can matter too. He doesn't say he's using, you know, it doesn't say what ester he's using. The test SIP, the first time he said test SIP, the next time he didn't say, he just said test.
Yeah.
So, and it was a lower dose. He might have been using prop. And if he skipped a few days, the levels can drop back down.
Sure.
Well,
he used SIP for this most recent test, and it's 400 every other day. And I'm just going to speculate on the, if he was using Watson, I'm going to speculate that it was SIP as well. Just, okay. But obviously, yeah, you know, just a guess.
So the one thing that I have never seen any data on that I would like to see, it would be interesting to see, but again, because most people just, their test levels are so high, they're beyond the range of the test, so you don't really know what it is. But, you know, typically, our bodies develop tolerance to drugs, and we know this happens. This can happen in a number of different ways. It can happen at the level of the receptors, and people always ask about, you know, androgen receptor density, does that go up, does it go down? And of course, the receptor density is reflective of the signaling, but what actually happens in terms of the signaling can vary too. So even if receptor density doesn't change, the actual signal that's evoked by binding to the androgen receptor, and this is not to mention the non-androgen receptor, quote-unquote non-genomic actions of testosterone, that can change, and that's what happens when you develop tolerance to a drug. But one of the other things that happens, we talked about the liver in metabolizing the drugs, is it's possible, I haven't seen the data, but it makes perfect sense that you're going to get an upregulation of that phosphodiesterase enzyme that strips off the esterified fatty acid, so the cypionate from the testosterone. And if your body is doing a faster job of clearing out that testosterone over time, as you adapt to having elevated test levels, it's possible that you can end up clearing that stuff more readily. So I'm kind of giving just background information as to why values could change over time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's possible. Now, you know, what he's saying does sort of make sense to me. You know, if the Watson were the good stuff and he started off with that and then he supposedly doubled his dose, but the stuff was only, you know, half as strong, and he came back at, he went from 4,500 nanograms per deciliter to 3,700.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, over the course of 3 months, that was within test variability and what could happen physiologically in terms of, you know, how fast he clears out the testosterone. So, or the ester. So that would make total sense. He may have just had, you know, like you said, underdosed gear.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would guess all you have to do is get back on the Watson for a few weeks and see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, that'll tell him what's going on. So, I'm not going to say that I know. I didn't test the stuff. You can you can send that. Like, I mean, heck, I think I obviously don't hold me to this, but people send their stuff to Llewellyn all the time.
Yeah,
and he tests stuff. Yeah, I think he does. And there's I just saw a company. Where was it? I think it may have been on one of the UK sites, Jordan. There are several companies now that will test your gear for you.
Interesting. That would be great.
Yes. There's one here called Chem Clarity.
Nice.
That maybe is the one I saw. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know if this guy's in the States, you know, you probably don't want to be putting this stuff in the mail, but, you know.
Well, up till 2006.
I'm sure it'll get through the UK, no problem.
Yeah.
Guys that are in the States, if you send just like a vial, a vial that only had like 1 mil left in it, that would get through.
Hmm. Right.
I'm not saying to do that, obviously, but I just, based on things that I hear, I'm pretty sure that would get through no problem. So if you wanted your stuff tested, you could do that quite easily.
You can send all your packages to Jordan. Anybody wants to send gear to the UK?
No, I will not receive your packages. Right. I think that counts as
a week from now, Jordan opens his door and there's 15 packages.
Especially if we pre-talked about that as a three. I think that counts as a conspiracy to import.
Right, exactly.
So, which is like 10 years of jail time. So don't send me your packages.
They used to have it available in the US where there were a couple companies that were testing gear. And due to some little project called Operation Raw Deal, they made that illegal, making it much harder, too, for people to kind of stay healthy, really.
Yeah, this forbidden fruit thing, you know, seems to be the war on drugs really seems to be panning out well.
Yeah,
you know, to keeping people from using stuff, it's just kind of crazy.
But that's awesome though that's available in the UK. I think people should check that out. I know a guy in Europe that can test it, but he's not, and he can even test growth, but he doesn't do it publicly. They do it for reviews and. I'm going to leave it at that. He did work with Llewellyn for a while. He did a lot of their testing, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. I thought Llewellyn actually, I know he has a bunch of pictures in his book and he actually has those test results. Does he not? Where it tested out? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They did a bunch of UGL testing.
That's what I thought.
The guy, you know what? I'll find out if I can post up what he's doing, but he does post results. If so, I'll mention it on the next show because it is available on the internet in certain places.
There's a Swiss company called Cybec that apparently is the most legitimate when it comes to this.
Okay.
And they're very, very popular, Cybec testing. And they have HPLC access, so they can test for you as well. But as far as I'm aware, Cybec testing is more expensive because of the lab conditions that they have. That company is used for like quite high end legal cases for various things. So like their tests are good enough to like hold up in court and things like that.
Yeah.
So they're quite expensive. There's another company. If people have got some spare cash, then Cybec is another company.
Mm. Interesting. I'm going to throw one more question in here, and after that, we'll call it a day. We've got a lot of good information out. This is something we haven't talked a lot about, glucose disposal agents. So, we've talked about it a lot on Bodybuilding Nerds. The guys over on Blood, Sweat, and Gear have talked a lot about those things. But metformin and berberine HCL, where do you guys stand on this? Jordan, is there any place in your program where you use these things?
I like ALA, RALA specifically.
Yeah.
The R isomer is stronger than sodium ALA. And I've used that on carb ups before.
Oh yeah.
When I haven't used insulin, and I have found that to be effective, especially alongside creatine, which also acts in that circumstance as a GDA.
Hmm.
So the combo of those two in that moment is really effective, actually. And I've noticed a significant difference when you're carving up. If every meal you have that combo of RAMA with creatine, you do get significantly fuller. Obviously, not to the same extent as if you were using insulin. Insulin kind of trumps everything, as we'd expect. I haven't had enough experience with what was the name of the product?
Berberine?
The metformin. Sorry,
oh, metformin.
Yeah. I just haven't used it enough at all. There were a couple of things about it that put me off the top of my head. I think it had an impact on IGF-1. And the other thing was stomach distress, I think I remember. So as soon as I read those two things, I was just kind of like, yeah, I'm not so sure about that. So I never really used it. Berberine, I know, has been shown to be probably the most effective supplement in terms of glucose disposal agents. And I haven't had enough experience using berberine either for me to really comment. So I used the old version of Matador a lot, which was by AD as well. But the main ingredient in that really was RALA.
Okay.
The new version of that has berberine in, but I haven't used it at all for me to write a comment on that. So for me, the only thing that I can say is that I find RALA really effective at the end of comp preps.
Okay.
So that's my stance on it.
Where are you at, Scott, with metformin and berberine specifically?
Well, berberine, there's actually a study that they compared it to metformin, and it was just as effective in lowering glucose levels. The thing about these, I can't remember if we talked about this on the show or not. I think we did. Maybe it must have been a while. But generally speaking, the way that glucose disposal agents are working is they're activators of AMP kinase. So they turn on this central enzyme that's kind of considered the energy sensor of the cell.
Okay.
And the cell, muscle cells, and this goes for fat cells too, but it basically tells the cell that there's increased energy demand, and in doing so, glucose uptake makes sense. And in telling the cell there's increased energy demand, for instance, in a muscle cell like a muscle cell that would be contracting, it also sends the signal to shut down other things that will be drawing energy. So it turns off protein synthesis.
Huh.
So AMP activation turns off mammalian target of rapamycin. mTOR gets turned off if you activate AMP kinase. So the way I sort of conceptualize this, you know, and I haven't used these a lot, and that's because of my particular situation. And like people like Ken Hill, especially when Taylor was still back in the day, when Taylor Normando was the host in the show.
Yeah,
those guys did. He did metformin for quite a while.
Oh yeah, they were on a big kick.
Yeah, yeah. So people can find those podcasts on PED Radio, and it made him really flat in a way that he didn't really like.
Yeah,
I believe, and that makes sense, you know, because you're. It's basically sort of a chemical form of cardio in a certain way, because that's what increased, you know, cardiovascular exercise will do. That increases AMPK. The next thing, you know, weight training is that it also sets up the stimulus for protein synthesis, particularly myofibrillar protein synthesis, so we get more muscle, larger muscle cells. So for some people who, you know, are sort of, you would, if you wanted to go with the old, basically kind of invalid idea of, but still, it's still helpful as a rule of thumb of somatotyping. If someone's sort of endomorphic and they muscle mass comes easy to them, but they also stay fat pretty easily, then that's someone who can probably, you know, they've got big, thick legs and they can do cardio, walk around, and they don't suffer the ill effects of cardio in terms of gaining size. So this might help someone who, you know, tends to get, you know, a little too fat, carry too much body fat in the off season. Then they could do some cardio and they could survive it. And that might be someone that the glucose disposal agent would be helpful for. On the other hand, if you're someone who can't put on muscle mass and you tend to be really, really lean, then, you know, and I know Jordan see these people, I have too, like a lot of times those people, they know they look better when they're lean too. So they do a lot of cardio and they can't gain muscle mass. Like, well, you need to cut the cardio back. Like maybe altogether for some people. So if you're someone who's leaner and, you know, you're taking a bunch of GDAs or using metformin and, you're not able to gain muscle mass, then that is something that you could consider taking out. That's, you know, or berberine is not going to, it's not going to help you in that regard.
Okay.
If you're gaining size and you're making progress and so that you're going in the right direction, then the berberine or metformin, whatever you choose to use, could be helpful in keeping the body fat lower, just in the way that cardio would be. And all those, you know, that's all kind of different conversation.
Yeah.
So you could use it in that regard. And you could use these on, you know, glucose disposal agents are awesome if you're doing some kind of a cyclical diet, like a carbing up type of diet. Mm. So let's say you do like a high carb day or like you're doing a cyclical ketogenic diet where you've got a day where you're definitely taking in a surplus of calories. So you're turning on AMPK, but you also want to make sure that you're loading glycogen. So it will help with load glycogen. That's, you know, played around with alpha-lipoic acid a lot back in my ketogenic diet days, one of my ketogenic experiment days.
Okay.
So you could add those in like with big meals, like post-workout, when you know there's no way if you just took in 1,000 calories that, you know, you're not going to be turning on mTOR. So that would be one way to sort of intermediate way to use them to your advantage and see how well they work for you. And a lot of people do. But if you're not making gains in size, then, you know, this isn't something, you know, that probably is going to be helpful in remedying the problem.
Sounds like Jordan's got some meal prep going on over there.
Yeah. That was he's tap dancing in the kitchen.
I'm just getting the next one ready.
Oh, man.
We've been on here for a while, 2 hours. Time to eat again.
Yes. Speaking of which, that's what I have to go do. I had my post-training meal on my ride home, and now it's time to get ready for the next round. You know, something I forgot to mention at the top of the show, what is it? It's Body Power is coming up. It's going to be May 12th through 14th. So you're heading out there, Scott, and you and Jordan both are going to be there. Jordan, I know, is going to be with Project AD. Are you going to be there, too, with Project AD?
Not that I'll probably be hanging out there.
Okay.
Jordan will be there.
Nice.
But no, I had worked on trying to orchestrate something with Granite Supplements, but it was just too early on in launching the company to invest in that, you know. And of course, I'm not the guy holding the wallet. So, but I'm trying to work this out with the powers that be over there. I was there last year because I was already there for a camp where Jordan and Corin carted me around, so I was already in the UK, and they had me do a talk and a practical demonstration and sit on a round table. So I got some stuff to talk about. Hopefully if it works out, you know, I'll get over. I'd love to go over there again because I had a blast, and you know, the Brits, UK, it's a great expo, man. It was fun.
Hell yeah, man! A lot of fun. That would be so cool. I'd love to check that out. I've never been to the UK at all, period. But to go there and then to see that expo, that would be something else, man. So
do it, man. Come over.
I would love to. I would love to. Well, maybe we'll have to make do that it. Work in the
and
future.
And then you can leap. And, do it, and then you can legally possess MTran and all those things. You want to try it as well?
There you go.
It's a free for all over here.
Come back.
Yeah, like when you walk down the aisles at the expo, like every fifth booth, they have like a big those things they put chalk in.
Yeah,
you know, they have one of those just full of orals. It's like it looks like all the different colored pills in there.
Or various raw powders.
Pull it, just swallow it down.
the drug laws here are strange because obviously it's illegal to distribute, but completely legal to possess. So it's a strange one for sure. But I'm just happy that it's completely legal to possess.
Right. So like if a cop walks up on you and you're handing someone drugs, you can say, look at the squirrel, and if they look away and you've actually got them in your hands.
Yeah.
And they can't get you because you possess, but it was never distributed. So
precisely.
Yeah.
The old look at the squirrel routine.
Right. Look at the squirrel.
Nice. Yep.
It's like the banana in the tailpipe, but look at the squirrel. It's the same idea.
Well, guys, for everybody out there that, once again, May 12th through the 14th, head out there, see Jordan, hopefully see Scott as well. We are out of time, fellas. Thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks,
man.
Guys.
For Jordan Peters and Dr. Scott Stevenson, I'm Scott McNally for Muscle Minds at the Advices Radio Network, and we are out of here.
Nice finisher.
Radio.